broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency...
We interrupt this program to bring you a news bulletin from Washington. The White House has just announced...
Here is a news bulletin. Shots have reportedly been fired.
Here's another late development, and this news keeps coming in.
This is an NBC News hotline report.
Special report. Verdict sparks violence. National...
After a couple weeks of not being on the air, mm-hmm. and then last week, I don't know if people know, we had the two-hour show, and we had to sort of do things different last week also.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'll be glad when we get back to normalcy and back into our regular studio.
Yeah, we're in kind of a little side studio, so if it sounds a slight bit echoey tonight, you'll know why. But this time of year, You have the sports stuff, which makes it very complicated for our regular schedule. And then on top of that, they've been doing a lot of upgrading here at the station to their technology. And so, you know, it's just been an odd time.
It's all an effort to make us sound better.
I hope so. Sure. I hope we sound great. We can use all the help we can get. Isn't that right, Investigator Shelley Wright of Wright's Coin Shop?
That's right.
Yeah. Just today, you said somebody walked into Wright's Coin Shop, or I guess it was yesterday or whatever, and recognized your voice. Isn't that right?
Yes. I greeted them as I was walking by, and he said, I know that voice.
And did he have a smile or a frown when he said that?
It was a smile. Everybody smiles at me.
Well, very good. We have a lot to talk about tonight. You want me to try this one out? Okay, we're gonna switch microphones. See, all right. What do you think? That sounds a little better. Okay, great. We'll use this microphone for me instead. What a program tonight. For one thing, this is actually our last new program before Thanksgiving. Because scheduling's not going to work out for us to do another one before Thanksgiving, even though it's not like we're going to talk about turkeys. You know, we've done that in the past around Thanksgiving. Gobble, gobble. Talk about turkeys and stuff. But we're not going to do that this year. That's because I have a really fascinating guest lined up for us on hour number two of the program tonight. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Indiana Jones. I know you are, Forrest.
Yes.
Shelley, you're an Indy fan?
Huge fan.
Okay. And the reason I wanted to have this man on for a while is that he is not only a real archaeologist, but he is a fringe archaeologist. Now, what I mean by that is he is a guy who is willing to talk about the alternative perspective on history and to dig into the nitty-gritty details about things that are uncovered at digs and during excavations that the mainstream community doesn't want to address because it might not fit into their current worldview. And his name is Jamie Hildebrand, and he lives here in the Asheville area. He has 4 degrees. He has a degree in psychology, 1 in anthropology, 1 in archaeology, and 1 in religious studies. So he's got this sort of insatiable desire to learn. And he says that one of the reasons that he is happy to go out and talk about this stuff, and he hasn't done a lot of public discussion. I mean, we're kind of breaking some ground for him getting on the radio. He's never done a radio interview before. He said that he is not censored by academia because he's not out there seeking teaching positions. And that gives him the chance to dig into this stranger kind of subject matter and look for truths that stare everyone else in the face, but they're just too afraid to say it out loud. So tonight we're going to talk to him about things related to maybe even the Ark of the Covenant, the old boys club in archaeology. We're going to talk about some ancient stuff that's been found here in the Americas, as well as weird things that have been discovered in other places around the world, even some underwater buildings, various pyramids. We're even going to talk some about cryptozoological stuff that has popped up in the records that people don't want to talk about. So I'm not sure exactly what direction that conversation is going to go, but it should be a good one. So that'll be hour number two of this evening's Speaking of Strange. Well, let's go ahead and dig into some of this news that's piling up here. You know, as if you didn't already have enough to worry about, there is a new game, they say, that is sweeping the nation, and it's called Knockout. You've heard of this, Shelley, right?
I have.
A terrifying new game. It's already caused deaths in Syracuse, St. Louis, and New Jersey, and it preys upon unsuspecting people walking the streets anywhere. A recent New York-based TV affiliate did a whole program on this trend, and they say that it involves randomly targeting passersby with the ultimate goal of being to just knock them out with one punch as they walk by. One victim they featured was a 46-year-old man from New Jersey who was found dead with his neck broken and head lodged between iron fence posts. So obviously he lost consciousness and went down and probably hit his head and broke it on the fence post. What's the point? One teen in the video says, hey, for the fun of it, they just want to see if you've got enough strength to knock somebody out. This has even been happening in the nation's capital in D.C. One woman who was attacked says she believes to have been the target of this game as a group of around 8 males on bikes came up behind her with one hitting her in the head. And so, you know, they say you got to be very aware when you're just walking down the street, minding your own business. Somebody might come by and just sock you in the head hard enough to kill you. That's pretty terrifying, isn't it?
More reason for you to get your concealed carry.
Yeah, but the thing is, they're probably just going to walk up and punch you before you even know what's going on.
They better punch me hard.
That's the thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you see it being done to somebody, run over them. Just, you know, get everybody out of their misery.
Well, you know, we've seen these fights, like these UFC fights, where one guy gets a really clear shot and just nails a dude, and that's it, lights out, and it just falls like a log. That's kind of what I envision happens, because you're talking about people who may be frail to begin with. They're certainly not professional athletes, and yet you have probably young, strong guys who are wanting to show off, and, you know, they punch you when you're not ready for it. Look at what happened to Houdini. You know, yeah. He got punched in the stomach when he wasn't ready for it. Houdini was professionally trained, but he just wasn't ready. And, you know, the outcome of that was his death. So it's pretty nasty, and it's an example of just how bizarre and messed up.
I know you were invited one time to punch someone in the stomach, Master Tom Cameron.
That's right, actually. You witnessed that, didn't you, Clark?
I did. Actually, I punched him also.
Did you punch him, too?
I did. But I think you got the best punch in.
Is there video footage of that somewhere?
There is.
Okay, because, Grandmaster Cameron, you've never met him, Shelley. You've heard a lot about him.
Right.
He lives up there in Chicago, and he does the death punch demos. They call him the human stun gun or death touch Tom. And he has all of these controversial demos. Well, I was doing a conference I was producing there at the Grove Park Inn probably almost 10 years ago now. And I think that the actual conference part was sort of in a recess, and we're just kind of milling around talking to him. And he says to me, punch me in the stomach. And I was like, sorry. He says, no, seriously, punch me in the stomach as hard as you can. And I was like, really? Seriously? You know? And
myself and Robert McGee, we punched him, but we didn't use our full, I don't want to hurt this guy.
I know. It doesn't feel right to just punch a guy for the hell of it. But I was like, okay, you know, he's a professional. He's trying to prove a point. So far as you saw, you know, I wound back like Popeye. I hit him so straight, so direct, so hard. It was like a punching bag. It couldn't have been a better punch. It was a punching bag. There was a smack sound, the sound of fish and
fish.
Fist and flesh. Fist contacting flesh. We're going to take a break, and we'll tell you what happened to him after that. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Just remember that you're standing on a a planet that's evolving, revolving at 900 miles an hour. It's orbiting at 19 miles a second, so it's reckoned, a sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at a million miles a day. In an outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour of the galaxy we call the Milky Way. Galaxy itself contains 100 billion stars. It's 100,000 light years side to side. It bulges in the middle, 16,000 light years thick, but out by us it's just 3,000 light years wide. We're 30,000 light years from galactic central point. We go round every 200 million years. And our galaxy is only one of millions of billions in this amazing and expanding universe. Expanding and expanding in all of the directions it can whiz. As fast as it can go, the speed of light you know, 12 million miles a minute, and that's the fastest speed there is. So remember when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere out in space, comes to bugger all down here on Earth.
Hey, welcome back to Speaking of Strange, I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and if there's any doubt that I'm a nerd, I actually can sing every word of that song by memory. It's an easy way to remember a lot of facts about the universe. Hey, that's what we explore on this program every week, Speaking of Strange, the unusual. And for those of you who are online, you can go to speakingofstrange.com for a live chat during the show. More information on weird news around the world and topics discussed, as well as links to the official Haunted Asheville ghost tours. Yes, even though it's getting chilly, we still do them. We also have ghost hunts, all that stuff, hauntedasheville.com. Find our Facebook page or Twitter. And I want to thank all of you since last week's show who have signed up for the reseller program for the Sunshine Simple Solar Generator. We have had sign-ups all over the world, and it only takes a few minutes to sign up. It's free, and we'll even give you a banner if you want to put it on your website or you want to put a link on your Facebook page and start selling them, and we start sending you money. It's that simple. Everybody wins. Everybody's happy in the end. So if you want to get involved with that, go to sunshinesimple.com. It is the world's most powerful solar generator for the lowest price. Sunshinesimple.com. And right underneath the video, there's a little button that says click here to become an affiliate. You click there, and it will tell you what to do. So before the break, we were talking about the one day that I let loose and punched with full force an innocent man right in the gut. And you know, Forrest, you're right. We did videotape this. I haven't seen this video in a decade, but I remember us slowing it down. Do you remember that?
I do.
And watching it in slow motion over and over and howling with laughter, because right when my fist makes contact with his stomach, there is this ripple that goes through his entire body. It's like, have you ever seen the old black and white footage
of the guy with the cannonball?
The guy gets hit with the cannonball, yeah. Hits the dude, and you just see his flesh just go rippling all throughout his frame. That's what it kind of looked like. That's the power of the cannons right here, Forrest. The cannonball. And so, yes, this wave ran through his body. I bet his teeth snapped.
But he didn't budge. He stood there like an oak tree. And I said, wow, you know, this guy is, he's powerful. I'd hate to get into a fight with him. That guy would whoop your ass in a fight.
And not even touch you.
Probably not, yeah. And so I did, however, hear, like a couple of days later, that after that he was pissing blood.
I heard that.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Yeah, so I hope I didn't hurt him too bad.
That's just my head that died.
Oh, yeah. Yes, obviously. You loosened him up there.
Right.
Oh, there are going to be better ways to, I don't know, make an impression on a conference.
Well, then go out and say, punch me.
I admire him, don't get me wrong, but I wouldn't want to have that job.
Well, that year, two people that made the biggest impression were Lauren Coleman and Tom Cameron, I believe.
I remember us being out there in the middle of the cold in January, and Tom's up there trying to break this ungodly chunk of ice that was not at all to the dimensions he had requested. And he's banging on this ice, and nothing's happening except he's about to break his arm. And but it's January, so the ice set out there for the whole weekend. And, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning when everybody's good and liquored up, we can go out on the balcony of our room and see, you know, drunks down there pounding on this thing, determined to break it.
Well, he couldn't do it, but I can.
Yeah.
Watch this. Give me another shot real quick.
Yeah.
That party liquor.
Yeah. And nobody put a dent in that ice the whole time. Never once. I mean, this is a serious chunk of ice. It was so serious that I got charged $700 for it.
The only thing put a dent in was your wallet.
Yeah, yeah, because they make, or they used to make big ice sculptures at Grow Park. They probably do now. You know, Grow Park is owned by a whole different company now. But so I thought, well, they've got ice all over the place. And I said, can you, you know, talk to Tom and hook us up with a chunk of ice? And they said, sure. And then it came bill time, and, yeah, I got a $700 bill for frozen water.
That's ridiculous.
3 blocks of ice.
And this was winter time. I could have poured water into a box, and I would have had a block of ice in a day or two. So, anyway, those were the days, huh, Forrest?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, those were the days. That was before we knew you, Shelley, right?
I know.
Yeah.
You would think that all the fun stuff happened before you met me, but no, I think there's still more fun stuff to be had with me around now. Don't you think?
No.
Yes.
You know, we're too old now. We're all banged up, and we have the weight of the world that's broken us. We're broken down men.
Uh-huh.
We don't have that sparkle in our eye. We've lost all hope. We used to be optimists, taking the world by the tail. Now we're just curmudgeonly old bitter men.
Just trying to make it from one day to the next.
Yeah. And so this is what you get, Shelley.
So fortunate.
But have you noticed how many police officers don't look like they're in the best shape of their lives?
Yeah.
Have you noticed this?
Yeah.
Well, here's the story from Tampa, Florida. Because, you see, I remember when I was in high school, and I was taking criminal justice classes that would give you college credit if you wanted to pursue that. They told us that it, in most places, is against the law to offer cops discounts on donuts and coffee and things like that, say at a donut shop. Because if you offer a discount to cops on your products, it's similar to bribery. Like, you're trying to get the cops to hang out around your place to get some free protection. Did you realize that? That that's frowned upon, if not outright illegal?
No.
Yeah. And yet, here's this story from, oh, no, we don't have the Florida bill. It's in our other studio.
Go to another story real quick.
Okay. We no longer can read a Florida story without a bell. If we lose that bell, we're going to lose half of the show content. We would have read you a cool story, but
not now.
It's not. We can't do it without the bell. Okay, Forrest, he's gone to the rescue. This is a story from Tampa, Florida. Well done, sir. And apparently,
sure enough, there was a donut shop that would give out discounted donuts and coffee and whatnot to the local police.
Ones that have been spit in.
Maybe. And their donuts are so good that a guy is in big trouble right now because apparently for months, he's been going over there and flashing around a badge and gun to get discounted donuts, but he ain't no cop. Of all the reasons to go to jail for impersonating an officer, it was to get the donut discount. And they say that his dad actually was a retired police officer, and so he was using his dad's badge. And so they asked him, you know, why did you do it? And he said, well, it was just a stupid thing. I wanted the discounted donuts. So it does happen, my friends. We're going to take a break. When we come back, how's this for a headline? Quantum physics proves there is an afterlife, claims scientist. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Headline, quantum physics proves there is an afterlife, claims scientist. That's quite a claim. But, well, it kind of makes sense when you read the story. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and you're listening to Speaking of Strange. You know, your whole life, you're raised up sort of believing that you were created by something bigger. Call it God. Call it the cosmic force. But this scientist says actually it works the other way around. That life creates the universe and everything that's out there. Now what that means is that he, Professor Robert Lanza, claims that space and time do not exist in the linear fashion we think it does. And he says, if space and time are not linear, then death cannot exist in any real sense either. He says that death as we know it is an illusion. He believes our consciousness creates the universe and not the other way around. And once we accept that space and time are tools of our minds, death cannot exist in any real sense either. Now, he offers as his proof of this
one of the most interesting and well-established experiments in physics, the double-slit experiment. And if you're not familiar with that, basically, scientists shine a light through a slit, and the light behaves one way, sort of like a particle. But if they shine the light through two slits, the light behaves as a wave. And it changes, however, between light acting as a wave and a particle sometimes, depending on whether or not you're looking at it. So it also goes back to what some people call the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, that actually you never know exactly what the state of the reality you are measuring is, because the fact that you are measuring it includes you in the phenomenon, and therefore you are affecting the outcome of the experiment. So he says that this experiment alone shows that if perception and consciousness is able to affect the way photons behave and therefore affect the way reality behaves, then we have to conclude that we actually are the source of all reality, and that includes concepts of life and death. His new book is called Biocentrism, and how life and consciousness are the keys to understanding the true nature of the universe. And, you know, I think he's onto something here. There are problems, though, because it's very difficult to think that if all of a sudden every single one of us on this planet woke up tomorrow and did not believe that people died, that we would all live forever. Now, I'm sure that's an oversimplification of what his point is, but I think it may have some validity if you consider that, hey, if our consciousness is all that creates everything, why can't we live forever, right? If we all believe that. So, you know, I don't know. It's an interesting theory. Anytime that legitimate scientists, though, start discussing consciousness, I like it, because that's a big taboo subject in science. Right. And they're afraid of it. A lot of scientists are afraid of consciousness because they just can't get it. They can't understand it. And that's what makes us different, that each one of us is a self-aware being. So all these little subatomic particles that are bouncing and firing around in your head happen to also be self-aware particles. And every time you create an instrument, what you're really trying to do is create some representation of your brain that is able to perceive to some extent what you're perceiving and record it.
Right. Well, also, you've got to take the consciousness factor out of most of your experiments, because consciousness is another X factor you have to play in there. It's like, I mean, if it's conscious, it's got a choice, so it's not going to do what the prescribed method says to do. It's going to do what it wants to do.
Which also takes us back to Schrodinger's cat.
Right.
Right. Is the cat alive or dead in the box?
Both.
Until you open it, it exists in a state that supposedly doesn't have any reality. Now, I know this was a big debate even in Einstein's time. Einstein said something along the lines of, I get this, this all makes sense to me, but I have a problem believing that when I'm not looking at the moon, it doesn't exist, right?
Right.
So, yeah, it's one of the deepest conversations that takes what we think of as science, and it overlaps it with spirituality. But it's a great sort of tone for us to set, because, you know, hour number two, we're going to talk about how dismissive scientists can be. You know, scientists, they're just human beings. They're flesh and blood. The instruments that they use are created by humans. They are used by humans. They are interpreted by humans. And if a and they've got stresses in their lives, you know, they have crappy relationships, they have trouble paying their bills, they have sicknesses, you know, they have a bad day. And if they have, you know, limited resources to do an experiment, and they do something and get the same result 99 out of 100 times, rather than start over and try to get it 100 out of 100, they'll just take that one time it didn't work and just kind of toss that out and say, yeah, well, there must be some reason that something happened that I'm unaware of, so just forget about that one time it didn't work out. And they focus on the 99 times that it did. Well, in most cases, that's fine. That's all you need. But in some cases, that one time it didn't work out is enough to destroy your entire theory. Right? It's like they say about flying saucers. If flying saucers are zipping around and there's an alien that has come out of one and visited a human being, all you need is solid proof that's happened one time, and that's enough. You know, all these other stories could be a bunch of BS, but if that's happened one time and you can prove it, that changes everything. Oh, well. I have to think of the Galaxy song again, though, right? Better yeah. Pray there's intelligent life out there, because this is what we got down here. As evidenced by a story from Wilkesboro, North Carolina.
Just down the road.
Yep. Man was in a GNC store getting into a heated discussion about his Second Amendment rights and accidentally fired his gun in the middle of the discussion.
Accidentally?
That's what they say. So they say he took it out to show it to an employee. At some point, he accidentally fired a round into the store's printer. After seeing what he had done, he told the store employee that he, quote, could not go down for this, end quote, and immediately left the crime scene.
No, you stay there and say, hey, listen, I'm sorry, I'll pay for this, don't call the cops.
Yes.
Yeah,
I can't go down for this, man, I gotta go, bye.
Yeah, that probably doesn't work to your best interest, because right now they're looking for this guy. He's a white male in his late 20s, about 170 pounds, 5 feet 8 inches tall, with brown hair and brown eyes. Fled the scene in an early 2000s model dark-colored Honda Civic. So, we might see that guy around here, but it kind of sounds like everybody, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He sounds like the kind of guy who might waltz into Wright's Coin Shop, though, honestly.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah, he's probably been in there.
Yeah.
He's probably a fan of this program. North Carolina. Well, when you're discussing your gun rights, you should probably keep the gun in the holster.
Maybe take the bullets out before you actually show it off.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to... Actually, no, we got about a minute, I guess, before we have to go to a break. In fact, when it comes to, let me read this before I get to that. This is a tragic story from Des Moines, Iowa. A father called the police to teach his son a lesson. His son took his truck without his dad's permission. They got into an argument, and the kid wanted some cigarettes. I don't know how old the guy was. I'm not sure it says how old. Okay, he was a teenager. He wanted some cigarettes. So he takes his dad's truck without permission. Dad calls the cops. The cops order him to pull over. He pulls over, but he won't turn off the engine. So one of the cops just fires 6 shots into the truck and kills him.
What?
Yeah. So his dad is obviously crushed at this point and says he has no idea why that any cop thought it was appropriate to shoot 6 rounds into this truck because he wouldn't turn off the engine. Killed his son. So, that's awful. We're going to take a break. When we come back, here's a story about the U.S. Army, soldiers, and robots. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and you are listening to Speaking of Strange. We'll be right back. minutes of hour number one on tonight's Speaking of Strange. Next hour, we're going to do a bit of an Indiana Jones theme for our guest, Jamie Hildebrand. And he's going to talk about fringe archaeology. And this is going to be a discussion I'm really looking forward to, especially since this is the first time that he has really talked about this stuff in the media. He's talked about it a lot, you know, within his circles and face-to-face with people. But he's ready to be as honest as he can, talking about the problems with the world of academia related to the sort of inconsistencies they're finding in the world of archaeology. That if people directing a dig find something inconsistent with their expectations, they'll toss it out instead of tell you about it. And, you know, how much conspiracy is there in this field? We'll find out. I also want to remind everybody, I'm still collecting stories for Creepy Little Tales, which is going to be published this spring all over the place. It'll be in bookstores everywhere. They're actually going to call it, It Was a Dark and Creepy Night. That's the publisher's title for the book. And if you want to contribute a story, I hope you will. Go to creepylittletales.com. There are only three real hard and fast rules. Number one, it has to be true. Number two, it has to be short. More or less, no more than a page. And number three, it has to kind of make the hair stand up on the back of your neck when you get to the end. You know the kind of stories I'm talking about? Yeah. Before I get into this military story, here's a story from Fort Pierce, Florida. Man there is in trouble. He called 911 twice because his neighbors would not drink with him. He got really upset, and he thought his neighbors weren't being nice because they didn't want to come over and drink. And that was exactly what he stated was his cause. They came over there, the cops did, told him the first time he had misused 911. 30 minutes later, he called it again, complaining for the same thing. So this time, the police were not so nice. They went there and arrested him. They said that he was drunk, but they said he had a container of blue ice in his front pocket. What is blue ice? Do we know what that is?
It sounds like something from Breaking Bad to me, like some blue meth or something.
It says a container of blue ice in his front pocket. I don't know. I have no idea what that is.
Got the Heisenberg blue meth going on.
Maybe. And blue ice is in quotations in the story, whatever that means. So, okay, when it comes to the idea of humans and weapons in harm's way, here is a story which originates from Fort Benning, Georgia. Headline, U.S. Army robots will outnumber human soldiers 10 to 1 by 2023. So that means in 10 years' time, 10 years from right now, the plan is for there to be more robots fighting than humans, 10 to 1. Anybody starting to have visions of Terminator here?
Definitely. Yeah, I'm having visions of that right now. That was scary.
I mean, when you saw Terminator, to me, it just seemed so unbelievable. But this is actually the logical trend. Why do people want to go out and die when they can send their machines out to fight for them and die, right? So it says, talking at a U.S. Army demonstration of autonomous weaponized robots at Fort Benning, experts said that each soldier could have one or five robots flanking him, looking for enemies, scanning for landmines. And, you know, I recently saw a news story, I think it was a CNN story, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was, about some of the biggest, best inventions that have come out recently. And one of them is a robot that looks just like a humanoid. I mean, because sometimes when you say robot, you're thinking, well, what are we talking about? A little remote-controlled box with wheels on it. No, this thing, it looks like a Terminator. It's a big, gigantic, metallic, android-looking, you know, thing. And they already have developed them well enough to go in to disaster zones, like the Philippines, for example, because they can lift unimaginable amounts of weight. They can navigate the terrain almost as good as a person. They're still really bulky and they use a lot of energy. But, you know, you can send a bunch of these robots out there and clear up mess. And apparently it's a very popular concept. So sure enough, we might live in 10 years to see armies of robots fighting each other. And
cool.
You know? That's better than us having to go out there. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, it'll be time for some fringe archaeology with Jamie Hildebrand. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. You are listening to Speaking of Strange.